We're now going to throw it over to OCAP Radio. They have a special segment. They'll be speaking with organizer Rogelio Cuevas, who's been in Canada for over 11 years since he left Mexico after being brutally tortured and imprisoned for his political activities. And so there's a party later tonight. It's called Victory is Bittersweet, La Lucha Sigue. It starts at 7 p.m. At Cinecycle, 129 Spadina Avenue, with a $5 suggested donation. So we implore everyone to join us at the fundraiser tonight and enjoy OCAP Radio coming up right now.
Hello and welcome to OCAP Radio. Tonight is Friday, October the 15th, and I'd like to welcome you all to listening to our show here on CKLN 88.1. This evening we are pre-recording our show because there is an OCAP fundraiser and victory party for Rogelio Cuevas. That'll be tonight at Cinecycle at 7 o'clock, 7 till 1 a.m. At 129 Spadina Avenue in the alley behind 129 Spadina Avenue. And in celebration of this victory, we're going to have Rogelio here on the show with us tonight, and we're going to talk to Rogelio about, well, Rogelio left Mexico 11 years after being brutally tortured and imprisoned for 15 months by the Mexican state because of his political involvement. When he arrived in Canada, he encountered a whole new battle that was entirely different and unexpected from the battle he had faced in Mexico. He was labeled a security threat and was then blocked from accessing the refugee claim process for many years. Consequently, he lived in Canada with no status until he won the right to make a refugee claim at the federal court level. He was eventually granted convention refugee status, following which new barriers pertaining to security emerged. So now, after a long and difficult fight to stay, his fight to win his right to stay, that there has been a victory, and he has finally been granted permanent resident status by Citizen and Immigration Canada. So we want to welcome Rogelio here to the show. Hi, Rogelio.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be invited.
Thank you. So, Rogelio, tonight is going to be a celebration of a really long time. 11 years is a long time out of somebody's life. But I want to go back to 11 years ago, to this process that you faced with Citizenship and Immigration Canada, because I think that is, and a lot of people will identify that struggle that many people are facing in Canada today, those barriers. Can you tell us a bit about the barriers that you faced upon arriving here in Canada?
Well, first of all, I left Mexico because of my political involvement. I was prison for 15 months in a clandestine jail. So, I mean, it's not like they put me in a regular jail to begin with. It. After that, I had to find a way to leave my country in order to basically to keep alive, to surviving. And yeah, when I left Mexico, interesting enough, I thought that my problems had ended at that point. But no, as soon as I arrived here, I faced a totally new different barriers that I definitely was not expecting of. And yeah, I made my refugee claim here at Pearson Airport. And
so you're saying, sorry, I just want to rephrase that. You're saying, like, you had faced all these problems and the torture and imprisonment in Mexico, and you were like, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go to Canada, and there unfortunately I have to leave my home and my country and I'll start a new life, but from there it's going to get easier.
Yeah, exactly. It's never easier to leave your country and family especially. Yeah, and somehow I did a little bit of research into which countries I could go to leave or seek for asylum, and Canada was higher up in one of the options.
What were the other options?
It was Italy, France, and Australia.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And you chose Canada?
Yeah, I chose Canada.
Okay. And so what happened upon your arrival here?
Well, I arrived here, to begin with, I would have to mention that, unfortunately, the immigration officers at the port of entry, I don't think that they have any knowledge many times of the people's backgrounds or history of different countries or whatever. Sometimes they just qualify somebody in a different kind of category that could be wrong, and nobody is probably there to tell them exactly what is the right thing to do, or if they have any kind of question, they could probably bring the person or call the person back to ask different questions. I don't know, the process should change in a different way, and I guess that was one of the main problems that I had.
Process was flawed from the beginning, from the port of entry, that they were, was it a lack of education that the, or a lack of training?
Yeah, it was a lack of knowledge of the person where he's coming from, and
with the situation.
Exactly, the situation. Even though my case was really well documented, right, from Mexico, from different kinds of organizations.
Different types of humanitarian organizations?
Yeah, human rights organizations, and it was well documented that I went through torture, and it was really well documented.
And despite that, they...
Despite that, somehow I got qualified as a security threat.
Right from day one.
Right from day one.
From day one, you were deemed a security threat, and that's despite the documentation that you had of the torture and the UN Convention on Torture Victims.
Yeah, exactly.
And despite that, said no way.
Yeah, exactly. And that decision was made for the officer.
The officer at Port of Entry.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Sometimes, I mean, they have no idea people are coming from, and exactly, they have no idea of how much damage they can cause in people's life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That guy was on a shift of his day 11 years ago in 1999, and he has no idea what that's put you and your family through.
Exactly.
For the next 11 years, and that's involved many, many different elements of core processes for the next 11 years of your life, deeming you a security threat.
Yeah, exactly.
So from there, they deemed you a security threat, and you had to go to the federal court to fight that.
Yeah, right from the beginning, I had to go to the federal court to fight that allegation, the first thing we're saying. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I was put in the category of a person with basically being in the limbo. Somebody that is allowed to stay in the country, but you are not allowed to work, to study, to do anything, basically.
What are they expecting you? I know the bureaucracy doesn't work in a logical way, but you were expected to not work, to not study, to not access health care.
Exactly. I could basically say that I didn't exist in this country. I just was...
You were a shadow.
Yeah, exactly.
Or somebody who lived in the shadows.
Yeah, I would have to live from where it was from, living from the shelter, I don't know, finding whatever kind of way to survive, which is interesting. That's one of the main criticisms of the system. I mean, if you're opening the doors to convention refugees or people who are seeking asylum, the main thing that you have to do is to find a way to bring them some support, especially depending on the different kinds of conditions or the person is coming from. Yeah. They have different challenges, different problems, and I mean, by leaving somebody in this kind of limbo, what are they expecting you to do, really?
Exactly. So, in a wider sense, for everyone who's coming here, being UN conventional refugees, for the torture victims, people are facing psychological barriers. You know that yourself.
Exactly.
There's a trauma, post-traumatic stress, stress disorder, and so many other things. And as it stands right now, Canada, it sounds to me like Canada is saying, on the one hand, we do accept people under the conventions. However, the reality of the situation is that we leave those people without any support or access to a full life.
Any kind of care, let's say, care or, I don't know, to access at least getting all hip or some kind of way to live. I don't know, it's just, I find it so ironic, that's what I'm saying. When I left Mexico, I thought that my situation would improve, and no, thank goodness for different people that helped me, and I live in different shelters where I didn't pay any rent, and people give me a lot of support, and somehow to access different kinds of psychological help was really, really hard. Yeah, some people through the years and months, I made different connections, and they helped me out that way, basically, pro bono.
They helped you out pro bono?
Yeah.
I mean, you would have to, because it's difficult to access that type of psychological care, mental health care in many situations, and then to be a non-person in the country, it would be impossible.
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly. It's just, it was really difficult to find myself in that situation. Now we talk about not just the trauma. I didn't speak a word of English at that time, which was another kind of barrier that I just got out from this traumatic kind of situation, not just leaving my country, my family, after just being reunited for a few months, and then I had to leave my country. Yeah, I mean, we can go on and on about my experience and how I had to basically try to find a way to survive.
That's...
Yeah, it's brutal and really sad. Many times, I would say, I remember walking distances and kilometers to go and see, going to a different kinds of appointments or see a lawyer or whatever, because I didn't have any money.
Yeah, so you walked that full way, and you were still learning the language.
Yeah.
And you were living in shelters. And in addition to that, after 15 months of being imprisoned in Mexico, you had to leave your family, and for the past 11 years, you haven't been legally allowed to visit them.
Yeah, exactly. That's another kind of situation. You're not allowed to visit them. It is basically impossible to survive. Unfortunately, let's say I was in this kind of situation, and now we talk about how many people are in this kind of situation from different countries, and they have no contact with their family. They're not allowed to access any kind of services, or they're allowed just to live here, but they still in some ways in the limbo, still make their refugee claim, they're protected persons, but they're not allowed to leave the country for different reasons.
And I think that people here in Canada, listeners, would have some amount of trouble understanding that lack of connection to your family back in Mexico, because I think people would not have a grasp that your parents don't have the internet. Your parents are an older generation, and they're poor, and they live in rural Mexico. So this isn't a situation where you're Skyping with them.
Yeah, exactly. Let's say just for me to be able to leave my country, it took me every member of my family to pitch in, and for me to finally buy a ticket and in order to leave the country. Yeah, now, and that's why you become a socially activist, and you do different things, fighting for your rights, because the amount of poverty and misery that you're living. Yeah.
Did you ever feel worried about being a political activist here in Canada, how that would affect your refugee claim, and even your ability to be allowed to have a refugee claim, because that's what your decision at the federal court in 2003 was saying, whether they finally agreed that you were allowed to be a refugee claim. And during all of that time, you were politically active. That must have... Did it occur to you? Did you feel, I shouldn't be doing this? Maybe I should just stay home?
Well, the system is based on some kind of repression and very well organized in the way that it tries to shut everybody down. We can use a small example, which is very ironic. I had to leave my country 11 years ago, and nowadays in Canada, in Toronto, after the G20, you can see the amount of repression that is happening. And people with trauma and and that have gone through all this kind of trauma already. I mean, when you see the increase of the police, the militarization of the system here, and everything else, you can see that are you really in a better country? Are you in a better kind of system? The one, first of all, is not even open to let you live and to have the freedom of speech that you have. Yeah, I mean, really, what is the kind of freedom I could have now at this point when they shut you down right away, right from the beginning at the port of entry? Then they tried to shut somebody down. It didn't just start in Mexico. It started in Mexico. It totally continued here in Canada. So, you know, that a different kind of way of torture and repression and exclusion. And the immigration system is totally exclusive and racist and based on some kind of exclusivity. But in some ways, you have to apply if you want to come and become a Latin American to the point system. And there is so many different things that you can mention about it.
And those are based primarily on wealth and education, and formal education.
Yeah.
If you're a refugee claimant, is your refugee claim still based on that same point system?
No, it is. No, let's say my, at least in my case, it wasn't based on that. And after that, let's say I finally won my case at the federal level in 2003. Mm-hmm. And after that, I finally could make my application for a refugee. I think I became a refugee, a official refugee in the same year. It took me another year finally to win my official refugee. Mm-hmm. And while I tried, I think it was a year after, that it could be 2004, I tried to apply for my PR, my permanent residence. Mm-hmm. Down the road, they shut me down again, claiming one more time that they were trying to bring me back to the with a new allegations on security.
And let me bring that back to political activism. So, to sum up what I think you were saying before, was that it was important to you to stay politically active because there was this continued repression and exclusion here in Canada. It was different from the physical torture in Mexico, but there was still aspects of a crackdown on dissent in Canada.
Yeah, it is. Many times we're so naive when we leave our country. We believe that by arriving in the so-called first countries, you want to be free and you want to have the freedom of speech and whatever. That's totally not the case. As I mentioned before, we have seen it, and we have been experimented how the Canadian system is changing totally. It's becoming so repressive, and I mean, anybody that tries to fight for their rights and to speak freely about what they think and express themselves is being tried to is being targeted nowadays.
And we're seeing that especially this week with Alex Huntley being put back in jail for attending for. I mean, the judge did rule that him speaking at an event was not a demonstration, and that was an excellent thing to hear because it was ridiculous that it was said that this was a demonstration, but Alex was still denied bail because they wanted to limit his further involvement in any sort of political organization. And so you find that, is this reminiscent of things that were going on in Mexico?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And let's say in Mexico, other thing that we can see is that many people have been dying for decades, since the 60s, 70s, different kinds of movements. And now we have seen exactly that here is the opposite happening, that people are fighting there for welfare, for different kinds of social services, and they are finally starting to win that through decades and many, many people getting killed and disappearances and everything else. And here you're seeing the opposite. Canadians, they used to have so many social services, and now they have been cut, and this is time for people to get organized and to really fight back and to realize that you definitely have something really good, and you have to fight for that and improve it and make a better social services, and that's exactly what is happening. And the amount of repression that we have seen with social activists is just brutal. It's just a real shame to see that.
And you want to point out that it's, you know, a slippery slope as far as the quashing of dissent goes, that things can go backwards very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing the austerity measures coming in, and we're going to see more of those under this Harper government. Stuff that was talked about during the G20, it was interesting. I mean, we could talk about this, that what got the most news during the G20 was the small scale, you know, some window smashing downtown, and that really took away from some of the decisions that were made concerning the Canadian government and its treatment of the people here.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you... G20, I mean, you can see the state how became totally militarized. Sometimes you can say easily, I don't even remember where I read it, is that they say that when you prepare for violence and different kinds of struggles, because you're expecting that, because you know that you're doing something wrong. That's why you're expecting people to react in a different kind of way. And that's exactly what happened at some level that day. Yeah, exactly. And you have to analyze how much money the government put in the G20 instead of putting social services and other things that could be making a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're holding people up rather than having them come live here in Canada, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it absolutely doesn't make any sense. And now the other thing I want to say, in the way that probably many people weren't expecting me to win at some point one day, for people working in the legal area, they thought that probably when I would be just living in some kind of status, but never even a permanent resident. I would have to say that there is so many other people from different countries that they are in exactly the same situation I was once, and I guess that we all have to get together and to keep fighting back and to keep asking for our rights and get well organized
and keep supporting people through that, because it was many years that people thought you, and it was many years that you were stuck in a gray area. You were given an OHIP card, you were given convention refugee status, and people in the legal world said, that's as far as you're going to go, Rogelio. You got your OHIP card, you're allowed to work, and that's it. And you kept on fighting and kept on believing and kept on, fighting, and that takes money and organization, and that's something that you want to help promote in the community for other folks too.
Exactly.
It's an expensive and long process.
Yeah, it is expensive, but it's really good to make awareness on the Canadian population, for the average Canadian to know exactly that while you arrive from a different country to use the asylum seeker, you don't have anything for free. There is nothing really given to you, and it's easy. Whatever, you live suffering, and you continue with more suffering here. And I mean, we all have the right to find a better way of living somewhere else, and to be free and express ourselves. And
we're all very honored to have you here in Canada as a permanent residence, Rogelio. Where it's a travesty that you had to leave your home, but. Canada and the people here are very well off. Canada or Turtle Island are so lucky to have you here, and and we love you in this community, and OCAP, you're a major influence to us here in OCAP, and we want to thank you again for being here with us, for talking about this, for putting your story out there. It's really wonderful, the courage and the passion that you have, and that you keep, that you constantly exude to everyone around you, and I just want to thank you for that, for you, and for being here.
Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, I just want to remind you that what perseverance and always trust that what you do is a good thing, and yeah, keep fighting always.
And you can win.
Yeah, for the good of the people, you can win, and you always win.
Absolutely, Rogelio. Thank you very much. And to all the listeners out here listening to OCAP 88.1 CKLN, just want to remind you that this evening, starting in a couple of minutes now, we'll be having a victory party for Rogelio. That's at CineCycle at 129 Spadina Avenue, starting at 7 and going to 1 in the morning. So we encourage you all to come out. There's a great lineup. Lau will be playing, Layla P., and many other fantastic musicians. It's going to be a great night. So we hope to see you all out there. We thank Rogelio for being here, Mark for his teching as always, and we'll see you here. We'll listen again in 2 weeks to OCAP Radio here on CKLN 88.1. Thanks and good night.